today we are going to look at ADA, approach to distribution asset management, or mini ADA. So on that call, let me welcome everyone. I see the Department of Energy is around. Alga, welcome. Lisa, and FSC. And sort of starting late because then we are eating your presentation time. As we all know, ADAM is at the center of the pilot project of rehabilitation of the infrastructure. Quite a sore point, sensitive issue, an unfortunate situation we find ourselves in, but obviously testing us, testing our results as to whether and when are we going to be showing progress in reversing the challenges that face us in this infrastructure at municipal level in particular. From what we hear from the department, and they will be sharing with us in full next week, very soon the first watt or megawatt out of Windows 1 is going to start getting generated. The implication is that the infrastructure must be ready for that. Because the moment the first one comes out, the momentum will grow. I'm sure what Windows 2 is at construction level now. And we expect the minister to announce the outcomes of Windows 3 next week. And even before we even concluded this first phase, already the former minister had indicated how much additional allocation is given beyond this phase. I can't remember the amount. 2,000 somewhere, isn't it? Around there, but that indicates confidence. So it obviously means that from our side, as Team Energy, whether it's the Parliament, the Department, and the various entities that are here, we should ensure that we assist in creating the conducive environment for that power to be generated with minimum hassle. Not that there wouldn't be any other challenges, policy, a few other things, keenness to ensure smart grid comes in time, keenness to have time of use being practiced, and all those things. But at least the basic that, at least the infrastructure, we should see some turnaround. And in general, we are here to just have a sense. To what extent now are we grappling with this pilot project to ensure that it starts in time and it gives us indications as to how fast and how meaningful can we be in turning around the challenges that are facing infrastructure rehabilitation backlogs. And on that score then, I trust all of the members will be alert enough as the presentations are being made to pick up that preparedness. I must indicate from the very onset, with a backlog which I'm sure it's around 53 billion now, 320 million rand, it's not even minuscule. In fact, it has made me to check the responsive of National Treasury, and later it will go to the department to our recommendations according to the project review. Because we made a couple of recommendations around this, and I did get something from the National Treasury on this around their budget. So we need to make sure that we link with that as well, that to what extent has the executive responded to our recommendations, where we're highlighting to the executive that government is trying to do its best to up the scale in addressing the infrastructure backlog. But as for now, 320 million has been allocated. I suppose one of the days we may have to even share this platform with the National Treasury itself so that we can get from them as to on what basis are they steadfast in giving us the so on certain African so big or men health yeah men health to put it very very obviously. But on a serious note, it is a cause for concern, not just for me, I'm sure for all of us. Having said that, can we then have apologies so that we can start the ball rolling with the first briefing from the
Chief? So follow me your causes, Babo Mayatullah and Honorable Pandemeva, who are attending other meetings. Honorable Loto, who's attending the standing committee on the Audit General. Honorable Smaller, who has constituency commitments. And then Honorable Salau, who's attending the portfolio committee on trade and industry. And then Honorable Matibela, just requesting that permission to leave at 11 a.m. That's it. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. Unfortunately, even if we have few people, we have to move ahead. I've trusted we will make sure that the minutes and other documents are shared with the rest of the members. Welcome to everybody again. And I see the department is sitting far away. Our good man. The team must be next to you to give you support. Not that I could get any scars with them, but just if you could just introduce yourself first, over to you.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. My name is Ben Momalo, from the Department of Energy of Allied Attempts. On my side is my colleague, Kota Facilities, who are working together on the project. Thanks, Honorable Chair. This is a presentation on Mini Adam. So, what is this is the overview of the presentation.
I hope it also do it a couple of seconds on why you call it Mini Adam,
okay.
Not Adam anymore.
Okay. The overview is as follows: is the electricity distribution industry overview, the electricity EDI challenges, current state of the EDI, approach to addressing the challenges, conditionality framework, the program implementation model, progress to date, way forward allocations, and mini ADAM. It's mini ADAM because now we're not looking at the whole of the distribution industry like across all the municipalities, but it's only a few municipalities that are dealing with using the monies that we got from when EDI Holdings was wound up. But some of the things are already addressed in the presentation. So again, as I said, and then I guess there will be more understanding on why is it mini ADAM rather than the whole rather than ADAM. Over the last 2 years, different attempts have been initiated to improve or structure the EDI in order to address the various shortcomings. In May 2001, Cabinet approved the structuring of the EDI to manage the buffers. And after years of attempting to find suitable solutions or models within the current legislative framework, environmental consultations were held with various stakeholders, of course, taking into account the energy security, legal implications, implications on local government as well as existing regulation. It became evident that we had to review the restructuring process. So a decision was taken that the EDI should be wound up. That decision was taken in December 2010, and not to go ahead with the next model. Honorable members would recall there was a model that was put in place to kind of structure the EDI and to actually put reds. We were supposed to have 6 reds across the country. However, that attempt was the cabinet decision of 2010 decided against going that road. So in November 2012, which was last year, cabinet approved the ADAM program and the start of the first phase. So here we only concentrate on mini ADAM as I already highlighted. And as I said earlier, that honorable members will get an idea or we get an understanding on why it's called Mini Adam rather than Adam. And Adam referring to approach to distribution asset management, so we just shorten it there. There's also a more long-term policy process that we are undertaking as a department on the full implementation of Adam. That is also done by other colleagues in the department. But from our side, we're dealing with mainly the implementation rather than the policy development. The current stage is we've got an unacceptable wide range of tariffs, you know, from one municipality to another. The tariffs are different. You might find that the municipalities are wall-to-wall. But however, when you look at the tariff, it looks like, you know, one municipality is in this country and another one is in another country because the tariffs are so wide. They are both different. And there are significantly different service standards and practices across municipalities. There's no one uniform approach or approach that all municipalities should say is sticking to, but everyone, you know, do things their own way. This, of course, lack of appropriate industry in the EDI network assets, which is one of the problems that have led to us being here, whereby we've got a backlog in the electricity distribution infrastructure in terms of refurbishment or construction. So that investment is actually causing problems. Since we don't have it, whatever little we have to try and use it to try and address certain issues. But of course, we're not going to be able to address all the issues, as the Honorable Chair has already said that we've got 320 million. Which is less than 1% when you compare it to 33 billion. So there you already see a challenge. We've got challenges pertaining to technical or non-technical losses as well as revenue management. We've got decrease in quality and reliability of electricity distribution to the end users because of the issues with regards to backlog, with regards to refurbishment. Therefore, the reliability there is not good. Of course, we also have a inadequate skill development for the industry. The phase one of the phase one initial assessment. Having done field visits to all 12 priority cities, the following observations were made. Asset management strategies and plans and appropriate systems do not exist across the country, a block point that I've already highlighted earlier. Municipalities and ESCOM are not providing for sufficient investment in existing and land distribution networks, leading to a backlog in infrastructure upkeep. The average age of networks is in excess of about 40 years. Demand growth exceeds load capacity of the networks, which will, amongst others, pose a significant risk to the effective introduction of energy efficiency strategies. Of course, another risk there is, as the Honorable Chair has already said, the first megawatts or the first part will be coming from the REITP. Then we've got a problem whereby if we are able to generate but we are not able to distribute, we're already facing a challenge there. Because then it's more like having a Ferrari body running on the Beetle 1945 model. It's not workable. So we need to be able to make sure that engine is no longer that of a vehicle of 1945, but we're getting it to the level of being an engine of a Ferrari in a Ferrari body so that everything is running smoothly there and the tires as well are running. So that's the challenge that we're facing. We're bringing in megawatts, but at the distribution end, we're going to struggle. So it means we'll generate more and spend more money and pay the REITs a lot of money, but then the benefit will not accrue to the end user, which is something we need to deal with. While the industry suffers from a lack of reliable data and appropriate measurement, all indications that network reliability is decreasing, which is evident in the increase in the number of outages due to poor performing networks and incidents related to electric cable and associated equipment theft, which is another problem. The regulatory environment is not conducive to enforcing licensing conditions of distributors. So that is another issue that we deal with as well. So now, how do we address the challenge? What's the approach in trying to address those challenges? We need to be able to address those challenges in a holistic and integrated manner rather than in pockets and trying to deal with issues as if they are all various issues, but in a holistic manner to try and make sure that what we do, we're doing it for the whole industry rather than looking at various issues in a separate way. The Adam turnaround program is comprehensive, multi-year initiative targeted at assessing maintenance, refurbishment, and strengthening shortcomings in key electricity distribution infrastructure. The current practices in the EDI do not guarantee business sustainability and socio-economic growth, while the associated disease operation of under-maintained plants is posing a significant risk to the industry. The maintenance backlog has been attributed to inadequate investment infrastructure that put the country at risk of depending electricity crisis. So some of these points have already said that, but now it just put more emphasis to say, if this does not happen, where actually is the country are we going? Another report on the state of the EDI infrastructure shows that even though there are pockets of good performance as far as maintenance, liability control and network go, a significant number of assets needs improvement. Through a study conducted by the EDI Holdings, which now has been wound up, revealed that the estimated maintenance, refurbishment, strengthening backlog distribution network of the in the distribution network amounted to 27.4 billion. Mind you, this was the figure in 2008. So most definitely we're not sitting at the same figure. So the figure should have been a bit higher. But now this is based on a research rather than we trying to estimate or something. So I guess now you know that we way over there. A holistic approach to asset management in the EDI is required to run parallel to the current work being done in the EDI. A business plan for addressing the backlog is already being developed. I mean, it's already developed, and the current capital expenditure in the EDI is currently 5 billion per annum, and there are resource constraints which make it difficult, if not impossible, to implement the business plan. However, 5 billion over what we need in. Not much. There's a lot of money coming in the EDI, but however, it looks like it's not a lot of money going into the lean business to try and refurbish, try and grow the networks. The backlog figure is not static, and the longer it takes to address it, the larger the backlog will become, and more importantly, the need for funding and competent human resources to address this issue will increase. So, of course, if we move from one year to another with this backlog and trying to sort some few things, the backlog, unfortunately, is not increasing. I mean, it's not decreasing, it's increasing, which might get us to a crisis mode. So something that we need to look into. We as a department are in the process of appointing consultants to carry out an update on the EDI backlog analysis, just to see how far are we in terms of the backlog, you know, comparing it to where we were in 2008, and of course going forward. So phase one, got the development of a business plan, and that has already been completed, and that's the amount that has been spent. Of course, we're looking at 2008. Now the phase two of it is the implementation of critical short-term projects identified using MYPD surplus after the deregistration of the MYPD. Now we're talking about the 320 million that was transferred to the department in order to manage Mini-ADAM. So phase three, we continue with the implementation of priority projects, development, then development of plans, and the development of those plans will, amongst others, encompass funding, the national maintenance and refurbishment for strengthening backlog, human capital development, benchmarking project, and there will be an update, there will be field audits that are taken on those municipalities, and there will be an analysis on that. And the phase four fee to be maintenance backlog execution based on the funding available. Now that will be the ADAM. So that will be the bigger theme of things rather than the one that we're just dealing with that's informed by the 320 million that we got from the deregistration or winding up of EDI holding. Resourcing, the funding requirements, this is the summary. Phase two is 320 million. Phase three, that will be anything from 23 to 33 billion. Of course, that will be informed by the study that we undertake. Who knows, maybe the figure might go up, might go down, don't know, but the figure will tell us exactly what we'll need in order to deal with phase three. It is essential that funding be sought to move the ADAM program beyond the first completed phase. The phase funding is required, as indicated above. It's required to initiate the whole ADAM program. The funding options for Mini-ADAM program, what we're already doing now is to assist municipalities with technical identification of most critical challenges, development of business plans, engaging with consultants or contracts on work to be done, and monitoring of work on a continuous basis, because then we can't give them money and let them run with it without being accountable anyway. whatever it is that we're giving money on, they need to report to us, and we need to be able to meet with them. We need to be able to track progress to see what they are doing. So that whatever it is that they are not doing according to the business plans or that which we have agreed with them in the contract, we need to sit them down and try and get an understanding what exactly is it that is a constraint in terms of them meeting their contractual obligations. And when it's B, we'll try and get other stakeholders to assist in terms of capacity, but not in terms of funding. Funding, they need to use what we have agreed with them on, but in terms of capacity or skills or any other way, we need to sit them down and try and advise them what they need to be able to do in order for them to be able to carry out that project within that funding. Because it's worth mentioning that this is a once-off funding. So therefore, we cannot afford a situation where municipalities, they are going over budget or they are not doing things right and we are monitoring and we are folding us. So that's what we're going to be doing on a continual basis. 320 million are available to implement the pilot with regards to critical municipalities to test the broader Adam principles. And going forward, that will be carrying base, which means part of the allowance to be approved by NERBA, and also making sure that there's ring fencing around tariffs so that money is not used almost everywhere to subsidize other issues. But there's a certain portion that needs to go back to the same industry in order to make sure that the industry is sustainable. And the issue of co-funding as well is something that needs to be looked at by municipalities through a soft loan. Conditionality framework for mini ADAM. Each municipality participating would be expected to agree to. First, we need to sign a contract with us, because then that's the basis for us to be able to monitor, and that's the basis for us to be able to transfer the funding to them. Without that, we can't transfer any funding, because without that, there's no legal obligation for us to monitor any project. It's their project. So we need to be able to put a contract in place so that we are able to transfer funds, and so that we can be able to use those contracts in order to hold them accountable in terms of whatever it is that we have agreed that they are going to be doing and we are going to be monitoring in order for them to strengthen their networks. A ring-fencing account for approved funding means the money goes into the account. It needs to be ring-fenced specifically for ADA, mini ADA. It cannot be used for other projects because this is specific. As I said earlier, once this money is not used properly, there's no other funding. As the treasurer said, no, we're going to give you more to do this. It's 320, and let's make the best use of 320. Therefore, it needs to be ring-fenced so it goes exactly to what we've agreed that it's actually going to. Submit the reliability plan for approval and report progress as prescribed. After signing the contract, we have given them issues to say, this is how you're going to report. So they need to be able to report as we have agreed. So this diagram just shows, it's more like a summary of everything that I've been saying now. At that funding level, there's a cabinet decision that was taken, then that 320 million was transferred, and the DOE is responsible for disbursing that 320 million, and the monies will be moved from municipalities. So that diagram simply shows that. So the first layer is funding level, then the second layer will be project execution, which will be managed by when the project manager there is the DOE. Then we've got your MASC, which is the Mini Adam Steering Committee that consists of municipalities, NERSA, DOE, NISA, National Treasury, and DBSA. Then the monitoring team as well. Okay, we've got DESCOM as well in there. The monitoring team again, will be the monitoring team of the DOE. So we manage the project in terms of making sure that we approve their plans and we allocate them the funding. And in terms of monitoring, the DOE then gets to make sure that the project is implemented as per contract. So those are just showing that from project 1 to project 10. And in this instance, we're talking about 9 projects. Progress to date, that I've already said, that will be given to 320 million. But then there's that note there. It says, due to limited funding, only municipalities who required emergency interventions and responded in time with enough information as required by the DOE were considered. No further funding has been allocated in the next financial year's 4 million ADA. In order to ensure that, so that I guess go back to the same point that I highlighted here. So this is just the emphasis again today. Going forward, no further allocations have been made for that. In order to ensure that many other projects are concluded in a holistic manner, a broad-based steering committee was established. what the duties of the roles of the steering committee. The key role of the mini of the MASC, which is the mini other steering committee, is to oversee progress of the program and ensure it is carried out satisfactorily. The MASC is comprised of representatives, as I already said earlier in one of the earlier slides, and the role there, it considers and recommends approval of business plans and achievement of outcomes, ensures that the project scope aligns with the requirements of the stakeholder groups, provides those directly involved in the project with guidance on project business issues, and ensures effort and expenditure are appropriate to stakeholder expectations, address any issue that has major implications for the project, and keeps the project scope under control as emergent issues force changes to be considered, and also report on the progress to those responsible at the high level. So in our instance, within the department, we report to the Director General. Many other allocations. So this just talk about the allocations. Nothing much as to who has been allocated what on that 320 million. 60 to KSD in Mthatha, that's King Sabata Dalindyebo. Nelson Mandela Metro, 35. Mwathe in Free State, that's 20. Mokaka, 20. That's in Free State as well. Nala, Free State as well, is 20. Mangau, that's Free State, 25. Msunduzi, that's Peter Matsberg, is 100. Soul Plight in the Northern Cape, 20. Chokwe in the Northwest, that's 20. Course in millions of rands. So then that's the breakdown and actually explaining what is it that the actual amount is going into this specific project now. That's one for KSD, one is the CBD, the upgrade of two transformers, 20 MVA extensions, control rooms, 6 kV plus 1 kV switchboard, 11 kV and that's in KSD. The second project is a matter of headlines, upgrade, so these are just specific projects. I'm not sure whether I should read through that or honorable law. So these are just the break, now breaking it down, being a project specific. So the way forward, it is imperative that the reform momentum created so many Adam programs be maintained, so that we don't just start here and whilst you know everything is in full swing at the end of project N and then everything else stops and we have to wait for law. So it will be good to actually keep the momentum going now that we've started. Other plans be put in motion so that then other projects could come, not necessarily through the mini ADA, but through of course the ADAM program, to make sure that we don't stop at project N from ADA, but once project N finishes, then other projects are also coming online. Focus needs to be directed towards the regulatory challenges affecting municipalities, including network rehabilitation, setting norms and standards for maintenance, monitoring compliance, and enforcement. Also, we need to have referencing of the type allocation and the monitoring of these allocations to ensure that it is applied in for the purpose it was intended for. So that, once we say, once NISA is approved, whatever they've applied for, that tariff needs to go back to the industry, because there's no point in leaving that tariff, being there, and that has been approved, only to find that money now goes towards other issues within the municipality. It's the electricity industry itself is able to make money. However, that money is not redirected back to the industry, which is now causing a problem, which is one of the reasons why we are sitting here with the current challenges that we are facing. So that needs to be monitored. There needs to be compliance with that. To say, you ring-fence, once the tariff has been ring-fenced, let that money that has been ring-fenced to make sure that we refurbish the network, we upgrade and do all the things that are needed in the distribution industry, that money goes back to the industry. That way we'll be able to go forward. Because as it stands, we have that challenge. That even if it's ring-fenced, however, it moves to other processes, and once it goes there, no one comes for it, and then the next thing is municipalities have a problem in terms of the distribution business. We need cooperation from all stakeholders, most especially those in local government who are responsible for service delivery, because without support from those the stakeholders whom we are working with in the local government, it's going to be difficult for us to be able to go forward and be able to get the industry to where it should be, to try and supplement everything else that is done in the electricity business, I mean, from generation and transmission. So we need cooperation. We need to be able to work as a team rather than working as rivals, you know, because all of us are working towards the same goal to make sure that we improve the distribution business. And we have to finalize the long-term solution, you know, in terms of all the challenges. One of the things that will help us in order to, you know, to get to that level, we finalize, we have a long-term solution, is the study that we need to undertake, you know, the backlog analysis. That will give us an idea of where actually are we and what is it that we actually need. Then we'll, once we know where we are, we'll be able to come up with solutions to try and get us to a level where we are comfortable that if we implement this particular plan, we'll be able to get, you know, to where the country needs to be. Thank you.
That's quite a mouthful. Thanks, Babu Malo. Without losing any time, can you move on to Soka?
Very good morning, Honourable Chair, and thank you for the opportunity. I would like to introduce Artemia on my left. We have Mrs. Jean de la Halle. She's our new Executive Director for Municipal Infrastructure and Services at SALGA. So in the future, I suppose you'll see her more and more at these meetings. On my right, who's going to do our presentation is Tobatsi Molloy. He's our specialist on electricity, and obviously our dear friend from Etekweni is Sandile Mapumalo, and he's always...
Let me correct you, sir. Ekakasi.
Ekakasi.
We'll explain to you during tea time.
Okay, thank you. He's always assisting us as far as our problems, and so I'll give over to Tobatsi, and he will assist us here with the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, honorable members, for giving the opportunity this morning to engage on this very important subject matter. The structure of our presentation this morning covers the background, infrastructure maintenance and development, issues around ADAM, the role of SALGA on the ADAM program, progress to date, skills and capacity development, and we'll also speak to the action plan in as far as addressing municipal challenges. But without reinventing the wheel, Chair, if this committee allows, I won't speak to issues that the department has already spoken to, in terms of the background and so forth. But I think it's prudent that I speak to slide number 6. One of the briefs that the committee has given us is to deal precisely with what does SALGA role in the whole ADAM program. Chairperson and honorable members, as SALGA, we are part of the steering committee on the mini ADAM program, which is chaired by the DOE. And we feel strongly that the SALGA we should also continue to lobby around issues of a national strategy that will address issues around refurbishment challenges. Therefore, we welcome the launch of this program, which in the main is in line with the SIPs 6 and 10 of the PICC. And one of our critical roles that we play within the committee as well, together with you and other stakeholders, is the issue around approving the whole budgetary strategy for the program, defining and realizing benefits, and monitoring risk, quality, and timelines. So, in the main, what is our action plan in as far as addressing municipal challenges? These are some of the issues that the DOE has spoken to. With regards to the issue of skills and capability building, Chairperson and honorable members, as well, we acknowledge the fact that there is generally a shortage of skills nationally in the engineering sector. And that is an issue that we have emphasized over and over before this committee. And as such, you'll find a situation that metros in general are able to retain specialized skills in that regard at the expense of smaller municipalities. And therefore, we also acknowledge that smaller municipalities as such will not have the necessary financial muscle to retain those competent engineering technical skills. So it's critical that metros and secondary cities partner with these small municipalities in order to support and assist them in as far as the issue of skills is concerned. And as further, we have also initiated what is termed the Business Adopt a Municipality Program, whereby a number of private sector companies are also coming into the play in as far as supporting and assisting municipalities. I've spoken to the second part of metro and secondary city partnering with small municipalities. And what is it that we are doing as SALGA to ensure that we support and assist those municipalities that are struggling? We provide hands-on support through our technical wing, the Association of Municipal Electricity Utilities, and also we also engage with COPTA through the Municipal Infrastructure Support Agency to ensure that there is some collaboration as far as municipal support is concerned. We also ensure that there is ongoing workshops to train and empower these municipalities so that they can deal with issues around infrastructure maintenance and refurbishment. But there's also a need to ensure that the collaboration between SALGA Department of Energy, National Treasury, and other stakeholders such as NERSA and COCTA, including the private sector, is an ongoing collaboration so that we ensure that we deal with these issues. The issue of metros assisting those struggling municipalities and also dealing with the human resource constraints within municipalities. We are looking at institutions such as your energy and water sector education and training authority and other electrical engineering training institutions to design courses that are geared towards assisting municipalities within how to plan and manage infrastructure maintenance and refurbishment. I think it is important to also indicate, Chair, that during October 2013, SALGA tabled a submission to the National Treasury Budget Forum. And one of the key recommendations that we put forth to the Budget Forum is that National Treasury in consultation with SALGA and other stakeholders, should begin to address or to look at the issue of addressing the funding gap for infrastructure maintenance through the following mechanisms. First, how do we renew infrastructure? We must explore options of funding municipal infrastructure renewal. It's either through grant funding or a local government loan. Those are some of the options that we have put forth. And I would like to believe that members are aware that National Treasury is currently in the process of reviewing the whole spectrum of grant funding. The second issue is around the question of municipal bulk infrastructure. We feel strongly that we need to establish a dedicated conditional bulk infrastructure grant for all the services that municipalities provide, ranging from electricity up to solid waste and water. So those are some of the proposals that we put through to National Treasury Chief. In conclusion, we are of the view that whilst others are being funded from the fiscus, this will enable municipalities to start utilizing existing tariffs to cover the costs related to providing the service. And that in a nutshell would assist us as a country to speedily deliver on the question of universal access to electricity. In the main chair and honourable members, the ATAM pilot project, the way we view it as local government is that it is a critical emergency intervention, which will be part of the overall strategy of implementing ATAM. But however, we feel strongly that the department should at least clarify issues around application criteria, for example. The question of allocation process, or at least come up with guidelines that will assist municipalities in how this fund should be accessed and spent. And it's also critical that the program is aligned to the PIPC with relevant SIPs in order to ensure better coordination. And lastly, Chair, we strongly feel that the issues around the restructuring of the sector should be given priority. We are hopeful that probably in the next session before this committee, we will be engaging on that particular subject matter so that we deal with this issue once and for all. Thank you very much, Chair, and honorable members.
Thank you, Chair. Can I ask Sandile just to add on to it, please? Thank you.
Chair, thank you very much. I was tempted to actually look at the progress in terms of the municipalities that have been allocated the 320 million mini ATAM funding. I did a quick check with the neighbor municipality that got this funding, which is Msunduzi. Since the allocation that was given to them, nothing has been transferred to them. And they said that it is only now that they are engaging with the department for the finalization of the transfer of funds. What that meant to us, which we have been crying for a very long time, is that there must be a criteria for the allocation of the ATAM funding. We must know what are the conditions. I noted that DOE indicated the conditionality, but why does it take a year to agree on the terms and the conditions for the allocation? And also, as we have been trying to get direction from the department as the organized local government through AMEU is that the strategy is not clear. And I think even in the presentation now, it indicated that we do not have a clear strategy. And we acknowledge that the department alone is not going to be able to come up with a strategy. So the stakeholders must be engaged to create that particular strategy. The 320 million just happened to be the funding that was available as a residue that was there from EDI holding. But it just indicates that there's no strategy. We would then ask if the industry could not put its heads together to craft a very clear and straightforward strategy for ADAM. And SALGA has got a very great interest on that because the municipalities are going to benefit a lot and SALGA's image is going to be greatly improved. Thank you, Chair.
Done. Thank you very much, sir. Thank you a lot. Ms. Fa.
Instead of saying things are supposed to be saying the soldier there, you know, just like me.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members. My name is Ricardo Hensby. I'm acting on behalf of the acting CEO of MISA, Mr. Ngaba Mslawe, who is on leave presently. We have a team who's been working on specifically our support to this very important program. I must indicate upfront, Chairperson, that we are located in a particular portfolio, which is cooperative governance. As you and the honorable members would know, that MISA is a government component of that portfolio. So we operate in a broader context of local government. And the discussion so far reflected on some of the issues with regards to local government. Our presentation doesn't specifically touch on those policy issues, but I hope we get the opportunity to also reflect a little on that, and I'll do that as part of the introduction. I've got with me my esteemed colleagues. On my left is Mr. Mtada. On my right is Shepherd, who will do the presentation. I'll just ask them briefly to introduce themselves and their roles within the organization. Thank you, Chair.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members and colleagues from the government institution. My name is Victor Matada. I'm based in MISA within the Office of the CEO responsible for planning and strategic support. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson, Honourable Members of the Portfolio Committee. My name is Shepherd Kitikwa. I am the Program Manager on the Energy Sector within MISA. Thank you.
Thank you, colleagues. Honourable members, just reflect briefly, from a principal point of view on some of the policy implications and practical implications of the program. We regard it as very important and very strategic. By the time when this became a challenge, Chair, I still had them here. And we are in 2013 already. I don't know what I'm going to lose next. But it has become... I hope I don't lose my mind in the process, Chair. But it has become critical for municipalities to deal with this particular issue. It is long overdue. And I can only encourage the stakeholders under the leadership of the Department of Energy to set up the efforts. A critical bullet was in the presentation that we need to keep a pace and momentum. In fact, we need to speed up the pace and momentum of delivery on this program. And we hope the pilot will take us in that direction. Chairperson, but at the same time, I think there's a window of opportunity for us with the pilot to get the mix right. Ours is one of focusing on the provision of skills, technical skills specifically, to municipalities. And that will allow us, I think, for the first time to ensure that we are responsible with the funding that is allocated to municipalities. I'll use an example with the Municipal Infrastructure Grant, which is a conditional grant of our department to municipalities. We give the money to municipalities. There are some conditions. But I don't think the conditions are enough because the presentation, previous presentation meant, or from the department, it mentioned signing contracts with municipalities. And that is important, but we need to go a step further. I think in the past we have been a bit irresponsible with just handing money to municipalities and, you know, imposing conditions without providing the requisite skills. I think in this case, we have an opportunity to tie the provision of funding with the requisite capacity building at municipal level. And that becomes very critical. So it shouldn't only be a contract, it should also be about the capacity building and development in those municipalities, and that is where MISA comes in. At the same time, Chair, we've seen that there are allocations for the specific municipalities, but also for the program management. And we need to steer clear of any potential duplication with this program. Now, I'm not saying MISA has all the resources in the world, but we are planning on using some of our capacity for this program, and my colleague Shepherd will elaborate on that further. And I think even going forward, more and more resources should be allocated, at least from our side. It's in our interest as a portfolio within local government to see that happen. But also it becomes critical from national side that we provide some additional resources to municipalities. Chair, this program will test the whole issue of the viability of some municipalities. I think our colleagues from SALGA has mentioned this. Because if we don't address that, because some of the revenue generated, particularly for energy, or through the energy sector at municipalities, is used for other purposes. And we need to get it right, so that the resources generated is spent back into you know, building capacity and also the actual infrastructure that we require to develop and to maintain. And in so doing, MISA and the MISA resources need to be cognizant of that. At the same time, Chair, before I hand over to my colleague Finan, I think it is important that, you know, all the role players work in synergy. And that we also draw in other local government stakeholders into the structures of the program. On that note, I'm going to give over to my colleague, Shepherd. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Ricardo. Chair, I will comment on the presentation, and I think my approach is going to be more or less like what Salga did, because the background to me, Adam, has been presented by the department, and I think it was appropriate that the department did that because they are in charge of the program. Ours is to support them in making sure that the program is implemented accordingly. So I will skip a couple of slides in relation to background of the Mini Adam, and I will jump on to item B, the role of MISA on Adam, MISA current support on energy, future role of MISA on program, conclusion and way forward. If the chair can allow me to do that. So this slide gives that introduction to the program, and as well as this slide background to Adam. I think the department has touched on that, so for the sake of time, I will also do the same and skip these two slides. However, I want to dwell a little bit more on the issue of MISA and its participation on the program. MISA is currently a member of the National Steering Committee of the program. The National Steering Committee chaired by the department was established as a governance structure that should enable all the relevant key stakeholders to participate in the piloting of the linear dam program. And I think we need to mention that sometime in September this year, the department, who is the chair of the National Steering Committee, requested for a gathering or a meeting in which we participated in terms of commencement of the program, actually understanding how we are going to be running this program. At that meeting, the terms of reference for the program were tabled. And I think that's where we need to be, as stakeholders around the Minia Dam, around the department, we need to be dwelling on in terms of understanding how do we derive our roles and what role, how do we then provide the support to the program. Basically, in terms of that, it summarized the role of that steering committee, which the department spoke to, was that of provide the national oversight to the program. That means program and project management, but as a national steering committee. To some extent, that then does not give room or space for individual institutions like NISA to then maybe zoom into the local municipalities and say, what in a specific allocation, what role can we actually do? Because we were then brought up to the National Steering Committee, and that's how we're going to be functioning. I want to then dwell on the issue of the Steering Committee and its responsibilities. That is approving budget and strategy, defining and realizing benefits of the program, monitoring risks related to the program, ensuring quality, and then also adherence to time frames by the local municipalities. Now, Chair, if you look into those issues, MISA has a role to play in terms of monitoring risk on the program in the municipalities, as well as ensuring quality and adherence to time frames in the local municipalities. As long as those municipalities are within the MISA current identified municipalities through the LG TAS, which is the 108, Chair. In terms of the mandate of the steering committee, I think the department also indicated these things or these bullets that we will be considering and recommending approval of business plans submitted by municipalities. I recorded that in that meeting we made it clear to the department that MISA would want to then provide support in terms of if there are some of the municipalities that are struggling with regards to compilation of the business plan so that they then submitted on time and of quality was done. And ensure the project scope aligned with the requirements of the stakeholders, provide those directly involved in the project with guidance on project business plans, et cetera, in terms of the address any issues that have major implications for the program. So those were the mandates of the steering committee, which MISA is part of. Now, what we thought we must do here for MISA side is that we need to indicate how MISA is currently doing its technical deployment, the model that MISA is utilized in terms of providing support to municipalities. You recall sometime in 2010-2011, MISA conducted a local government turnaround strategy, and through the process, a number of municipalities were then identified, which came to, I think, 108, which MISA is supposed to then be targeting, because we did acknowledge that we cannot then be providing this support to all the 260-odd municipalities. So as a phased approach, we then took a targeted approach to say, MISA must then look at 108 for now. It started at 81 and then it grew to 108 because there were others that were added on. And I think what's important for us to highlight here is that this should be low-capacitated municipalities. Now, if you take that statement and you look at some of the municipalities that have been allocated the budget for Minia Dam, they won't necessarily fall in that category. So there is that disjuncture which we also need to then look at, because you'll find that there are municipalities which have been allocated the Dam allocation, but they are not necessarily supported by MISA. And those are some of the things that we'll need to discuss with the department, Chair. Now, looking at that that diagram, Chair, what we're saying is that MISA is currently targeting 108 municipalities, and it's using two models of deployment. One is what we call individual technical expert. In this model, what we're saying, Chair, is that you have an individual who's a qualified, registered professional, either electrical, mechanical, civil engineer, name it, Chair. Those are the people that we then get contracted with as MISA and deploy in a particular municipality. based on the needs that have been identified through what we call the local government turnaround strategy. And from that, we then did what we called needs analysis, etc. And then we then identified what kind of resources to deploy in those particular municipalities. For the sake of time, we had this idea, Chair, where we wanted to indicate which are those municipalities, but then we said we might then be diverting the discussion to something else. So it's important to just note that that's the first model of deployment. The second one, Chair, is that we then realized that obviously the 65, at first there were actually 76 odd, and through some resignation, the number is dwindled down to 65. So based on that, MISA realized that we're actually not enough to then cover the 108 municipalities. So there was then a discussion to have what we call shared model, where an individual can then cover one or two municipalities as well. And then on the other side, Chair, the professional service providers. What we're saying, the Chair, is that MISA enters into contracts with what others would call consultant firms. And as first phase, we looked at 25 PFPs that are currently deployed in various municipalities as well, providing that support that's needed. Most of that support from the PFPs is at the planning level, which is master planning, etc. And then at the bottom, Chair, you'll find that MISA is what we call, what is underpinning these two models is the capacity building program. Within MISA, we've got three divisions, which is the technical support to municipalities, the capacity building program, which looks at how do we bring in new skills and train them so that they then take over the responsibilities in the industry. And then the third one would be the administration, I think, if I'm not mistaken. So that's the model that MISA is currently utilizing. And I think, Jay, if we have this in the back of the mind, you'll understand when I say that there are some of those municipalities, when I show you the municipalities that have been allocated the mini-ADAM program, where we're not currently providing support. Now, let me deal with the issue of the current deployment. MISA is the 65 that I indicated earlier. These are currently deployed in 107 municipalities out of the 108 across the country, and the 25 PSPs. Like I said, the role of the PSPs is to assist municipalities in addressing specific issues pertaining to infrastructure and service delivery backlogs. Now, obviously, the PSPs are on a contractual basis, which is running up to next year, September, and those issues will have to be looked at as we approach next year. In terms of current support to municipalities, a total number of 91 municipalities has been assisted currently to develop and adopt integrated support plans. Now, this has been done through the individual technical experts, where we say, in those municipalities where we are deployed, we can't just go in there and provide support. You need to understand what are the specific needs of these municipalities, and then how are you going to have that? How are you going to provide that support going forward? And then included among these 108 municipalities is 23 plus one district that are the most that were selected by cabinet for focus support towards the reduction of their high service backlogs in water, sanitation, as well as electricity and other services. An integrated support plan for each municipality was formed by the outcome of a diagnostic assessment that I indicated earlier on. I think I've spoken to those issues, so I'll move to the next slide. In terms of the support that MISA is providing, that was broadly the other two that I spoke to were at a broader level. Now, coming to the support that MISA has provided to the energy sector, there is, within the capacity building program, there is what we call the placement of electrical apprentices for operation and maintenance of distribution infrastructure. This is being done by a capacity building unit within MISA. Training of official municipalities, electricity, technical departments focusing on electricity distribution and solar, as well as renewable energy. Because as MISA would say, we shouldn't only focus on the current distribution or energy generation, we must also look at the renewable energy as another area that we must then be providing our support to. Supporting municipalities, municipal officials and unemployed graduates qualified in the electricity field to register with relevant professional bodies. You will realize, I think Salva, when they were here, they said there is a lack of or shortage of skills within the sector. And with that, MISA said, okay, we must go into the industry and identify either unemployed graduates or those that are employed but not qualified, and then try and assist them to get registered or to get employed so that they can then get registered. Because within the sector, within the industry, you'll find that there's an issue about if you're not registered, if you're not registered with the body or EXA, there's an undermining in terms of the kind of support that you provide to municipality. Consultants don't tend to not recognize you if you're not a registered graduate or a registered engineer, which is something that we are addressing through that program. Supporting and facilitating the trade industry for both municipal officials and employed graduates, granting of bursaries to students in electrical engineering. I think to that effect we've got about, I think around 20 or so students that have been provided with bursary for electrical engineering and related fields. Currently, a total of 234 electrical apprentices are placed in 25 municipalities under 6 provinces. Those that are listed here, Eastern Cape, KZN, Limpopo, Mpumalanga, Northern Cape, and Northwest. In addition, 29 candidates are undergoing experiential learning in municipalities across all 9 provinces towards qualifying as artisans in the electricity sector. So that is the specific support that MISA is providing. However, I also talked to others that we've initiated recently. Those are the numbers, in terms of the location of the apprentices that I spoke to, the 134, not 234. I think the department did indicate the project. Ours was then to also just indicate that we are part of this process and we do have an understanding of where these projects are and what are they. Now, what is MISA's plan in terms of supporting the program? What we then identified after having attended the first Mini-Adam steering committee was that MISA needs to then plan to provide support to the department on development of asset registers, so that because you will find that you go to a municipality and the municipality doesn't even have an idea as to how much is their or what is their asset register, how much assets do they have, and where are they. So we say as a targeted support meter, when you have deployed either a PSP or an individual person, you must see as to how can you assist the municipality to identify what are their assets and how much are they worth and where are they located. The second issue is to provide maintenance of operation and maintenance support in terms of the electricity side. Project management, which is broad project management in the municipalities. Investment networks and master planning, like I said, through the PSPs, MISA is providing master planning support to municipalities. Energy loss management or energy and revenue losses management. Technical standards, improving efficiency in procurement, pricing and tariff structuring, as well as technical skills development through the capacity building program. So that's what we intend to do when the program gets underway in terms of the mini ADAM as well as the full-blown ADAM chair. In terms of the conclusion and way forward, the support indicated will only be provided to municipalities when MISA has technical experts or PSPs. Like I said, that it's not all that the 9 day, MISA doesn't have deployees. Like for example, in Msuduzi, we've got a deployee in Ngubundo, but not necessarily in the local municipality. MISA has also put in place plans to recruit 9 additional extra engineers that will be deployed to each province to augment existing limited support. I think I must also put on the table that as well. I think when Ricardo spoke, he indicated that we have resources. But you will realize that some of the resources are also limited in different sectors. And to try and assist that process, we came up with this idea that we need to recruit 9 additional qualified or senior electrical engineers who will then be deployed in the provinces and will try and work with those that are based in the local municipalities to speed up the process. Through the capacity building program, as indicated earlier, MISA will be training 29 candidates on experiential learning in municipalities across all the 9 provinces. I think with that, Chair, I would like to thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ms. Andri, my understanding is that nothing has started in any of the 9 municipalities. Is that the situation, Baba Nwan? not a single municipality has threatened having some nyakaza, some activity. Whilst the FSC is coming over.
Chair, if I may reply to this. Actually, all the contracts have been dispatched to all 9 municipalities, and I already have, as of yesterday, I think 3 backed, which means that the project is going. As soon as they sign the contracts, they go ahead with the project.
You're answering like a politician. I just wanted a very clear response from a project manager or engineer that something has started. Certain municipality software has already done something, it's very clear, nothing is yet. Not so on the number. Yeah, we understand the contracts are coming there because the agreements and draft and whatever, but there's nothing on the ground. FFC or PSS is ground.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, just communicating, 4 of the municipalities where people are used there, they're not necessarily working on this project at the moment. They're busy with, the run-of-the-mill work, which includes work on electrification. So hopefully it will coincide. But what becomes critical is that, we move as the steering committee, moves the project forward to full implementation so that our resources can also kick in supporting it. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson and honourable members. My name is Daniel Parkes. I'm one of the commissioners of the Finance Fiscal Commission. I've brought 3 staff members with me. Khalid Bau sits on the left of my back, who's the project manager for provincial budgets. And Hendrik Stenhuis is our parliamentary officer. And Sasha Peters is our senior researcher for the local government. She will be doing the presentation. Just to confirm that 2 weeks ago we did a presentation to the portfolio committee on energy-related matters in terms of the 2014 FSC recommendations and the submission that was submitted. For today, we will look at the following 3 aspects. One is the nature of asset care challenges as identified in the Finance Fiscal Commission research. We'll focus on the government response to poor asset practices. And then we'll look at specifically the Commission's input to the approach to distribution of asset management. And we'll hear some of the recommendations that we're making. So, Chair of the Commission, I would like to ask Sasha to take us through the Commission's presentation.
Good morning, Chair, members of the committee and other colleagues. Chair, as the Commission slightly mentioned, our Division of Revenue submission entails a chapter on repairs and maintenance, looking specifically at water and electricity distribution. The challenges within the sector were highlighted by other presenters. But just to reiterate the FSC's position, we see the challenge as two-pronged. On one hand, there's a problem with the regulations surrounding asset management at the local government level. There is no formal legislation guiding municipalities with respect to asset care. There are asset management guidelines, but they were drafted in 2007. They have not been updated to reflect the current realities within municipalities around asset care or international best practice around asset care. So it seems that there's no sort of guideline for municipalities. Oversight is poor. Where oversight does exist, it's more around compliance with accounting standards. So like when you report on your capital assets, it needs to adhere to the GRAP standards, for example. So there's that financial compliance that's looked at, but there's no compliance with asset management protocols in place. Then there's the other prong of the challenge is related to performance, where you see under-budgeting and underspending by municipalities on repairs and maintenance. As the slide shows there, we see under-budgeting amounting to about 5 billion per annum and underspending around 9 billion repairs and maintenance. The extent of the renewals backlog is as severe. Our modeling shows that to address this, that the backlog lies between 8 and 41 billion. It may be necessary to have a separate program to address this backlog, but given existing underspending, we don't think at this point it would be useful to go that route. Chair, and as shown in the, when I presented to the committee about 2 weeks ago, should the current, if the status quo is to remain, in about 5 years' time, we will face the threat of not being able to deliver on this important basic service. If we take a step back and just look at the definition of asset management, it's about decision-making, planning, planning over control, acquisition, use, safeguarding, and disposal of assets. And this is done for two reasons. To maximize the service delivery potential of your infrastructure, but also to minimize the related risks and costs over the life of that asset. So the definition alludes to the need for municipalities to take a life cycle approach to the management of their assets. So the minute they identify the need for an asset, they need to start planning around repairing, maintaining, and how they will eventually decommission the asset at the end of the day. This is very different to what we currently see within municipalities, where there's more a reactive approach to maintenance and renewal. Chair, I showed this figure to members about two weeks ago, but just to go over it again. What it shows is the performance of municipalities in various aspects of asset management. So if you look at the x-axis of the graph, we assess performance in things such as asset knowledge, asset management, planning, information systems, etc. Then if you look at the y-axis, the right-hand side of the figure shows the level of performance, and it ranges from awareness to best possible practice, which is at the other end of the spectrum. Light yellow bars refer to your low-capacity municipalities, the dark yellow your medium-capacity municipalities, and the red your high-capacity municipalities. If you look at the blue line, it indicates the average practice of municipalities. The red line shows where we would want to be with respect to asset management practice. And that red line is somewhere between just being competent and being very good at what we are doing. But on average, all the municipalities score below 50% in all categories of asset management. The concern, if you look at the bar showing your asset knowledge, it shows that municipalities are uncertain of the extent, location, composition, and physical attributes of their assets. So this raises a very key concern for the Commission, and that is upon what basis are they planning and budgeting for repairs and maintenance. Chair, the figure drills deeper into asset management practice and focuses specifically on operations and maintenance practices. So as shown on the x-axis, it looks at things such as operations and maintenance strategy and analysis, planning, contract management, and monitoring. The blue line shows the average practice with respect to municipalities. And generally, the scores with respect to operations and maintenance is very much below standard. It's well under 50% across all those categories. The scores in respect of strategy and analysis in particular indicate that municipalities are not in a position to properly estimate their asset needs. Where they score highly is in respect to operations and maintenance contract management. And then what this refers to is having arrangements in place for contractors to conduct maintenance activities and to keep emergency spares on hand for reactor maintenance. So very different to what we'd want to see. We don't want to see reactor maintenance. And also this has cost implications if you, as opposed to if you should plan well in advance. So these findings are confirmed in various sector reports. For example, a 2011 NIRSA report indicated that 87% of municipalities had maintenance budgets, but only 53% of them actually had maintenance strategies in place. So, I mean, again, you don't have a strategy in place, but so on what basis are you actually budgeting and spending? So I think we all agree that asset management in general is in a very poor state. And there's a need to determine whether if this poor performance is as a result of inefficiencies on the part of municipality. So there are no consequences where you don't perform. So is that the reason why they're not abiding by sound asset management principles? Or are there real challenges where, for example, you know, the municipality just can't attract and retain good skills? Or is it a combination of those two things? The responses by government has been multi-pronged. You've got the establishment of the President's Infrastructure Coordinating Committee at the national level, which is a high-level committee that's been tasked with coordinating and fast-tracking delivery of infrastructure. You then have local government-wide interventions such as your MISA, and then sector-specific interventions like ADEM. We also have, for example, conditional grant funding by the National Treasury. There's a grant called the Infrastructure Skills Development Grant, where they aim to place interns with appropriate skills in municipalities. So now you have all these things with significant amounts of money attached to them. I think it was raised in one of the other presentations, what is the extent that these interventions talk to each other, and that you actually go into a municipality with a well-coordinated package of capacity-building initiatives, as opposed to a million interventions that actually just confuse the municipality. Actually, as with other presenters, I think I'll skip the details around the establishment of ADEM and go to the FSC's views on ADEM. Okay, as you know, we had limited information on ADEM, so our views are based on the information that we got, which was a report from Mr. Wolfley at the Department of Energy. But basically what the Commission's views on ADEM are as follows. We think that there's a need for ADEM to be contextualized within the current reality facing the sector. As was mentioned by presenters, ADEM was put on the table at the time when the reform proposal was still around. That was scrapped in 2010. And we see that the ADEM strategy is not updated, both in a substantive and sort of superficial in a superficial way. For example, substantively, you know, the estimates around what is required to address the backlog and the problems are now outdated. According to our research, we'd need closer to 40 billion to be addressing this problem, as opposed to the, I think it was 27, so as the 27.4 billion suggested with the ADEM program. Also, just in terms of the documentation, we note that it still relates to read, and I mean they've been scrapped, so surely just for the sake of being up to date, we need to reflect that in the documentation.
Which documentation are you referring to?
I've got documents there that shows this reference to read.
In which documentation? No, don't show me. Just give the title of it.
I don't know the title of my age here. I can.
okay. Carry on. The FN will help.
You see what is on, and I'm purely going on what is out there on the web. You know, we've got still EDIL.
It's a name. It seems to be on record.
Approach to Distribution, Asset Management, Adam, ESI, 2010 Forum.
2010 Forum.
Mm.
Okay.
So
post the scrapping of rents.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's...
Then, as was mentioned by other presenters, the rollout is exceptionally slow. If we think about the magnitude of the problem, then the fact that we don't see any movement is a big concern. And then, as was raised in other presentations as well, there's a shortage of technical skills. The implementation of ADAM, it is said, will run concurrent to the day-to-day running of the municipality with respect to repairs and maintenance, which indicates for us that it will be quite HR intensive. And we're just, you know, wondering how we get around this given the shortage of technical skills in the sector. Last week, the Minister of Finance tabled the medium-term budget policy statement. And in that statement, the role for infrastructure investment and assets, the role that needs to play in spurring on greater economic growth in South Africa is central. Also, the Minister highlighted that there's a need to make better use of existing resources to get rid of waste and inefficiency. So if we think about the performance of municipalities where they underspend, they're under budget, you know, we need to get performance correct so that the infrastructure assets that municipalities are working with can actually contribute to greater economic development. The recommendations that we propose, I think other presenters have touched on, but it's about improving the regulatory and accountability frameworks. So we need enabling legislation that will formalize what municipalities are meant to be doing around asset care. We also need up-to-date infrastructure asset management guidelines that can guide municipalities in the technical implementation of what needs to be done. And then very important for the Commission is greater enforcement of accountability. Where there is poor performance simply because of inefficiencies on the part of municipalities, accounting officers need to be held accountable and repercussions should follow. Chair, we also wish to emphasize Section 154 of the Constitution, which envisages an important role for national and provincial government to play with respect to capacitating municipalities and assisting and enabling them to perform their functions. And then finally, it's the need for an integrated package of infrastructure capacity building interventions. We need your pick to be talking to what NIS is doing, to be talking to ADAM, to be talking to any other skills development interventions there are out there. This will not only avoid duplication, but also improve effectiveness of these interventions. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Prof. Sasha. The only thing I am concerned about is that this is an EDI voting document, which is no longer there, from the extent to which it is still having some validity these days, whether this has been inherited by anyone in this regard. But however, let me thank everyone for this, and I must highlight from the very onset how we could have had honourable members the alertness of having included the National Treasury. You know, could have been very, very helpful because quite a number of things that come out would need their input. I know there's been some interesting issues being raised here, and one was sensing why are these things being raised here? Doesn't the team, when it comes together, handle those things, you know? So I hope we didn't bring it together to teach one against each other. Yes. You have your own platform to engage on issues, and more than anything, we're interested yet to see how far are you doing in engaging under what you call it, MASC, and also the steering committee, definitely. Mm-hmm. I must express my concern from the very onset that up to now there's not a single municipality that's doing anything, no matter how minuscule. If you look at the record, all the members, we have been quite insistent and been putting pressure on not just the department, but let me say on Team Energy to do something about the infrastructure block. Now, RFC has done it again for all your students, unfortunately. You're saying there's understanding of 5 billion and there's under budgeting. There's under budgeting of 5 billion and there's understanding of 9 billion. In fact, one of the things I'd like to get a clear indication on that on one side there is rehabilitation backlog and the other side is renewal backlog. If they are different, same. Oh, it's the same renewal and rehab, okay. No. Then if it's the same, then the question I have is that the rehabilitation of what is existing, fine. But then the new infrastructure, which also would be heavy backlog component, not so on the members. And we need to know how much is that, so that we can have a fuller picture, no matter how horrifying it is. We just need to know, right? The bullet and know exactly, you know, how much are we supposed to put, because we can't put in infrastructure of 3.4 million over a couple of years without ensuring that there's additional infrastructure for electricity. That's a question. Let alone power in all forms, gas and other stuff. Sorry, this just got triggered, you know, as we're soon. The first thing I was going to talk about is the criteria for selection, but it's already been indicated, but the uneasiness, which I hope as your team you have to handle, is I think Trasalga said that the department must clarify the criteria. Now the question one would have, why should that be clarified when you're part of the team? Aren't you supposed to trash out the thing? Why bring them here? Hopefully, as we move along, one has picked up a few things. I'll highlight them, but with the expectation that somehow they'll be dealt with the speed they deserve, honourable members. The fragmentation, the tariffs, standards and practices, once again, you know, what is the quality of engagement amongst and coordination amongst the various players? Maybe one of the things that I scribbled it for FFC is that do you ever invite FFC from the FFC report to National Treasury? Do you just directly invite FFC to share their recommendations as Team Energy without waiting for National Treasury to bring them to us? Because they usually bring very interesting, you know, issues. I understand the holistic and integrated approach that is being raised in the context of asset management. But my interest, not necessarily today or not, but even in future, but how does that include, or how do you look at that asset management within electricity distribution industry as a whole, which of course needs to be restructured, and also the electricity sector as a whole? I may be a little bit ambitious, but surely I would love to hear someone giving us the 3-4 data on that. No, it's nice, even if you have forecast, but you still have an understanding of how this focal point is located within the whole picture. Because remember, when we were concluding this mobile, we said, by the way, this has shown us one thing, that the electricity sector as a whole must be restructured. And I think this is just one of the focal points or focal areas that we'll be looking into of asset management. Maybe not now, but in future. But for now, one has to highlight the significance of both public and private investments. At this stage in time, we're talking a lot about public investment. Okay, it's there, but honestly, yeah, fine. But I'll say to Alice, you know, private sector has got a very interesting eye. They look at Squint, what is government doing in the can't, it doesn't have to be investment. Making a proper legislation and regulation, that's a form of investment. I'm just provoking that. And I've just run through this, honourable members, before I hand over to you. Holistic in terms of the executive or the government, but for us, honourable members, I think we need to think on that, of course, after the election. It's the energy committee, but culture committee must come. Appropriation, and I don't know what the finance would have to be put in. I'm always confused between these two, but it would be good that we engage with them and see what do they say about this. Because they have, when you have your 5 billion understanding, under budgeting and 9 billion understanding, surely we need to have an ear and a response from appropriation, if not finance. Reform momentum and beyond is one of the things will be very key for months and years to come. This is a trigger point, but how does it go? It links with what was said, I don't know who think the catalytic effect of Adam is for municipalities to be able to start doing funding. Please don't say that, because we'll write that every of our diaries and monitor that. Is this one of the expected catalytic effects of Adam? Because this is that really. So to repeat, we will monitor like a hawk. I don't say it's wrong, but it's of such a profound nature that it will make us cock our ears and widen our eyes and even get X-ray spectacles for the future. Business adopted municipality program is a brilliant initiative. How I wish you could have all municipalities full in this room and say to them, amongst other things, this is the reason why we have a government that's heartily against fraud and corruption. Because how does business adopt a municipality that's fraught with corruption and fraud? Let's be blunt and open about this thing. Who's going to come when he knows that, you know, I mean, people are out in the streets, they come, they do, you know, they may be doing it in a wrong way, but they're human beings, they've got brains, we see things happening, you see? So I hope much of it is having, you know, one effect of adopting a municipality, but it will also have that deterrent effect to those who are engaged in fraud and corruption, because it's very clear, there's no municipality, you know, that will come to a municipality. I mean, there's no business that will have anything to do with municipality that's not making attempts to get rid of fraud and corruption. If it's human nature, I know. You know, people just do it. But I would like, as a citizen of South Africa, to see a municipality making very serious attempts to get rid of fraud and corruption. Then I'll say, okay, I'm prepared to take a risk because I can see they're doing something. But if they're not doing anything, I mean, how can we complain about then a business not coming to the party? SIPs and the inclusion of SIPs is linked to the what was raised by Walmart Fumulo of strategy not clear. But we'll throw it back to you guys and say, look, surely by the time you come back and engage with us on this, we'd like to hear something that makes us mind. In fact, my expectation was that even conceptually, Adam should have been integrated within some of the agencies, one way or another. Not being Adam, no, full Adam. As I say, even conceptually for that matter, even if it was just one line, I don't know, I haven't read all the full things. I think just personally I've taken your point that it must be a funding package plus skills. Otherwise, it will do all the good things and leave the high dry. Only to revert back to square one. The number of trainees is fine, it's quite applauded, but to me it's low. And let's tell ourselves, you know, don't see it as me saying to you, but let's tell ourselves, these figures are low. Let's roll our sleeves and see how fitters and FET colleges come into play. Something that strikes me, if you say the asset register is wobbly, but some of the infrastructure is 40 years old. Wasn't it registered before? Of course, thanks to FFC, because you cooperated, I think that asset knowledge is really one of the compromised areas. But still, my question stands. To me, at least, the old infrastructure, more than 20 years before the current technocratic dispensation, should have had some records one way or another. So it just means that we really need to roll our sleeves in this. High expectations on MISA, just uneasy on that. In fact, I say anyone can comment, unless I'm reading the situation wrong, but it seems there's a lot expected from MISA. I don't say MISA is not expert yet. You're also too young to be expected to all, because even as an institution, you yourself are going to mature to some level to be robust enough to venture into 285 municipalities. Okay, 100. Let's not even say 108. Even that 108, you know, we expect, because there are troops, not just ordinary soldiers, special troops. And honestly, we all know, even if we met the soldiers, special troops are special troops. And that's it. And we expect them when they come, they will leave a visible impact. I think for now that's still the sort of my comment. And actually, one of the things that struck me as well is integrated infrastructure support development grant. Is it full name? Or since development grant, yes. To what extent has this been used? In fact, then, one would even ask the whole issue of packaging and the holistic approach. But if it was a grant that has been there for some time, the extent to which it has been tapped, particularly for just Adam, or the extent which you intend tapping from it, let not pretend as if something is already on ground. One of the members, over to you. But I hope I've provoked you enough. Just a moment. Member Tuvela Mafazasin and Honorable Freely.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, when we go to infrastructure, asset management, at times we blame the municipalities, but at times they are not supposed to be blamed. Because when they came in 2000, the registers were not there. That's how far I know about the assets of this country.
As a former mayor.
No, I was a speaker.
Apologies. But still very close.
Thank you, Chair President. I just want to, my question is to Salga. I just want to know about the monitoring part of Salga to the municipality. I'm asking this question because there are municipalities that are taking their own contractors, not contractors which are recommended by ESCOM to electrify a place and then it becomes a soft bay. The other one which I want to talk to again is the one of saying the bigger municipalities to align themselves with the smaller municipalities. I don't know whether you still recall the red one, because red one stopped because of red one could not take off. It could not be aligned. The metro did not want to be with the smaller municipalities. So how are they going to do it now? Because they were saying their revenue is taken away if they stretch too much to the smaller municipalities. That's my question. And the other one is, I just wanted to know about, I don't know whether that was the answer to say the wanted to know about the places where you are placing trained people, because you've counted in Limpopo, you've counted Polokwane and something, but the others are not there. So I just wanted to know what happens to these others where there are no experienced expertise in those places. Thank you, Jefferson. Hello. Yeah. Okay, we'll get technology right eventually. Chair, I've just got a whole lot of concerns, questions, and I'm going to sort of ask it in the order of the various presentations. In terms of the presentation on the mini Adam, I'm looking at it and I'm saying, while government is committing to huge spend, enabling legislature for infrastructure and hopefully bring about economic growth, the severe strains that we see and the challenges that we see within the municipalities and the growing backlog is actually quite scary. We had the presentation from FFS, right, 2 weeks ago, and I have to say, it still hasn't made me feel comfortable. You talk about assisting municipalities, but what are the time frames? I don't see real time frame. We talk about ring fencing of the tariffs allocation. Now, given the fact that municipalities are notorious and have become reliant on particularly electricity revenue, how exactly is the monitoring going to take place? Because I don't see it. I don't see in the presentation. I don't see this accountability really being put into whatever strategy there is. And how do you make sure that there is compliance in this? Also, just very importantly for me, what is EFSIM's commitment to the infrastructure maintenance, particularly? Because you say here that there is very little commitment from them. I know that this is a very tall order to get all the stakeholders committed, but where is the three-year strategy? If we could have possibly a executive summary of the three-year strategy. And then, of course, somebody asked a question, how come money has still not been transferred? If a year ago it had been signed and approved in Parliament, money's not been turned. Has the terms and conditions been signed by municipalities? What is the hold-up there? Just in terms of SOTA as well, the skills shortage in the electricity, in the energy sector is really, really worrying. It keeps coming up in this committee and obviously poses serious problems in municipalities. You spoke about the partnership between the metros and smaller municipalities and business, but can you give us any examples of any kinds of successes? Can you highlight that to us and just tell us if there is one, because you say that it has been happening? And then again, how far you got in terms of working with the different teachers and the upskilling? What has been done about the young people coming into the area of this expertise? Can we have some concrete evidence here? The other thing is, given the vandalism of infrastructure in communities, what is being done about engaging communities to take ownership? When we take ownership of infrastructure around us, we appreciate it better. Is there that kind of engagement taking place? Is there consideration for it? And then certainly it's a concern that's just ringing in my head all the time about how is the department going to keep up with the ongoing backlog? But yes, it's true. As we build or as we fix something, something else is falling apart. In terms of MISA, again, we talk about technical skills. We spoke about the potential for duplication. Well, what are all the skills interventions? Are we throwing money at the problem or are we understanding what the problem is and how we're supposed to do it correctly? And then again, are there successes in the 108 municipalities, and what are they? How is it being managed? How is the skills transfer, or will the professional service collapse after the contract ends? So is there a skills transfer? Is there upskilling in those municipalities, or when
the contracts end and the professional service contracts are taken, I guess, will those borders collapse again? Just a consideration as well, is NISA considering looking at possibly retired engineers and looking at them and saying, can you partner with us to do mentorship for our young people? Because I'm sure a lot of people out there that would want to give their time minimally to do mentorship, which is very important for all of us. And then again, what are the time frames for the various candidates and artisans to become fully conversant in their respective areas? I didn't see that. Is it a year? Is it 5 years? Is it 10 years? How far back are we going? How far forward are we talking? And then why so few numbers when we have huge numbers of youth completing schools? How are they being engaged with? How are they being brought into the mainstream or into this kind of thinking, into this kind of profession? I'm concerned, I'm asking, is the portfolio, from the portfolio committee's point of view, from mine, is the strategy holistic, and are the various institutions, organizations on the steering committee, how well are they connecting, how well are they getting together, or is it a once-a-month conversation and we all go away, and what actually happens at that point? For me, it's concerning. We spoke about local government. FFC spoke about local government having 1.2 trillion infrastructure under their control, but 1.2 trillion rand. I can't even think in so much money. That's a huge amount of money to be in the hands of people who are not necessarily skilled to look after it, to look after the infrastructure and things like that. It's really, really worrying. The worrying thing for me again is underspending. So despite serious challenges in infrastructure, we've got underspending, we've got underbudgeting, which says that, again, the upskilling that we've been hearing about today, the conversation we're hearing, it doesn't appear to be filtering into those municipalities. The graphs don't look good in terms of asset knowledge management, really big concern. And again, I just wonder how much engagement is being taken place with the commission. And then finally, Chair, in short, is the integration with the different institutions? Are they really talking to one another? Or is everybody putting in their budgets and having the nice to knows? And what really is the time frame there? And finally, I really want to know, how are we going to monitor ethical behavior in municipalities? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, you said that you were hoping these presentations would make you smile. I think it's going to be a very long time before we smile on this issue, Chair. I didn't expect to come here and smile.
Careful, I'm not going to choose iPad like this in future. This is not stable.
No, Chair, in fact, my opening statement was actually to commend you for holding another hearing on this. I mean, the fact is that we've had a number of hearings on this particular issue. We have tackled this as a committee, but still, I am not in the least bit content that we are grappling with this as an issue as a country. I mean, I think that the backlog is growing. I think the institutional arrangements that are disincentivizing truly dealing with this particular issue are still very much in place. I think that we have not come up with an holistic strategy. And I think that the two departments that are missing from this, but they have been at our hearings before, is OCTA and Treasury. I mean, they really need to be part of this discussion as well. I mean, because solving this thing is not the responsibility solely of the Department of Energy. This is far more of an analytic problem that speaks to the very problems that happen at local government level. And there's a fundamental breakdown there. So the question is, how do we solve this? Not only how do we solve this in terms of our present kind of challenges, in terms of the infrastructure backlog, but also in terms of the kinds of challenges that are coming down the track as well. And those challenges are that things are starting to shift, particularly in the energy field, with regards to people starting to go off the grid, with the people starting to produce their own energy. Revenues are getting tackled on that level. So there's major threats that local government are going to face in the present model, which we need to address in terms of how we go forward. And I'm not seeing any of that. And I understand this is a difficult issue. I think everyone is kind of overawed by the thing. But I think Adam is trying to put a band-aid on what is a gaping wound. And as the FSC says, in 5 years' time, the patient will be good. And clearly we need another strategy to deal with this. a far more holistic strategy that can actually deal with it going forward. Now, when I look at this issue, and I crack my head over this thing, I think it's one of the most difficult challenges that we actually face in this sphere, because there's so many different dynamics to this. But I think that if we take a different approach and we take a step back and say, well, what is it that actually is the positive view? What is it that we can actually work with and go forward from that point of view? And so when I look at municipality, I think the major kind of positive is that, as the FFE said, we've got 398 billion rand in assets in terms of a grid. Now, that's the asset that that municipality has. It's been degraded now, and it is losing its value over time. But in actual fact, let's see that as an asset, not as something that just needs to be invested in, but actually that is a positive. So that's an investment that is there. When we look at pricing energy, though, I think that we need to start to differentiate the way that we price energy at a local government level. So I think that we need to put the charge in there that says this amount of money that we are taking back from the consumers is going towards the payment of the upkeep of this particular asset. So that's the first thing we need to do. And so that will also enable us to then say that if people want to put solar panels on the roof of office blocks and things like that, they need to then pay a network charge. There's no free battery in the sky. I mean, this myth needs to be broken down. So the municipality can then generate revenue to pay for their particular grid through this network charge. So that's the first thing that they need to do. Then the electricity sales can obviously be put on top of that, where a certain markup can be put on, but obviously we're reaching a kind of level now where those markups can't continue to be put on to the same level as they used to be. We cannot use electricity to subsidize other services. So therefore we need to look at other services and to what extent are they being subsidized by electricity in the current scenario, and to what extent can we change that particular formula. But this is something that needs to be dealt with on that level as well. Then, of course, I mean, you mentioned the issue around corruption and that. I mean, a municipality, if you run it like a business, I mean, essentially you should be looking at what your return on investment on your particular assets are going to be. But I suspect that what's happening in a lot of these municipalities is, in fact, far too much money is being spent on the kind of corruption, as well as, in fact, on the kind of political grandstanding things. So too much money is probably being spent on the admin, and we need to tackle that. And there needs to be repercussions. And the FFC said that some of this is due to a lack of consequences on poor management. Well, I think the consequence that we are seeing is, in fact, service delivery protests. I mean, that's the way that people are voicing it. But there needs to be another consequence that comes in before service delivery protest. So we clearly, and perhaps what that requires is us changing the ERA, if it ever finally comes to us, is to give NERSA the authority to revoke a license and to distribute electricity to a municipality if they do not run that right. Because at the moment they don't have that real authority. And perhaps that's something we need to look at. So that is one aspect of it there. Then in terms of the attracting required skills, which is the issue which the FFC brought up, I mean, it always gets me, though, that we're sitting in a country which has an unemployment rate of, a narrow definition, of 24%, poor definition of 40%. Yet when I travel around to a lot of these local government municipalities, like the one I visited in Madibeng, where the sewage plant just doesn't work anymore because there's no skills and they haven't invested in that. I mean, it just gets me that there's such a major mismatch between a 40% unemployment rate, and yet we don't have the skills, we don't have the people to employ to actually do the basic functions of local government. I mean, surely this is something that we have to get right. I mean, if there's a major demand for these skills, then surely there's something going wrong in terms of sending a signal out to the broadly unemployed people to say, get these skills and you can be employed. What is breaking down here? Why is it that we cannot, in fact, get those skills to people and hire them in those particular areas? This needs to be looked at. Perhaps this also got to do with the culture of local government, that people don't want to go into a local government where they're seeing that it's not a conducive work environment, particularly if, as you say, there's corruption that covers it. But these are things that we really, really need to tackle. I also think, though, that some municipalities are probably not viable, and this is an issue that we're going to have to grapple with, too, is that some municipalities, particularly in rural areas, do not have the revenue base to underpin their kind of attraction of skills, and so they can't pay people enough to actually attract them into to that particular municipality. So therefore, maybe what we should be looking at is grouping together municipalities, whether it's on the district level or what, and saying that let's run the electricity department from that level. Maybe we don't need electricity departments in each small municipality. Maybe we can do this differently. I mean, perhaps we can even take the distribution grid and say, well, let's actually parcel this out to a business then that can run it, or even Eskom to say, well, you can take it over and derive an income and then make sure that you run this properly. I mean, these are the things we're going to have to stop grappling with, because this is failing across the board and we're not getting to grips with it. So I'd be interested to hear on those particular issues. The other one is, you haven't mentioned Eskom, and Eskom accounts for about 42% of the distribution grid in South Africa, and it seems that they're not doing too bad a job, but I'll be interested to hear the feedback on that regard. But one of the big complaints from municipalities I know is that Eskom is supposed to sign service level agreements with municipalities when they take over a particular distribution sector. And often they don't do that, and there's a number of outstanding service level agreements. And so in that way, they are not able to fund some of the services which municipalities are expected to service through the electricity sales, such as street lights, robots, and things like that. So I'm just interested, we need to grapple with that aspect of it too. And I see Eskom's not mentioned here at all, and I'm just interested if people have comments around how they can be brought in and what their role is in terms of tackling this challenge as a whole. Thank you, Chair.
Quite a mouthful. For me, before we go for break, the lack of time for the pilot, I don't think that's up. And can I provoke you, if anyone has got some ideas on how to encourage investment, whether there's been any thinking around the private sector. And we need to talk openly about silo syndrome, if it still exists, and how do we reverse that? Because we can't afford it at this stage in time. And we definitely cannot afford it. Because, as you see, we're just putting in a band-aid, you know, on a gushing wound. And some comments on 9 municipalities versus missiles. 108 overcapacitated municipalities. Mr. has already said it. It may be a reality, but I'm not saying stand on the box of the accused, but just some comments on it. I must say we got surprised, because, I mean, I assumed that, you know, Mr. has taken the whole nine. Just thinking broadly, but there it is. It's the reality. And obviously the Sindhuzi situation, you know, I think some response has been given to it, but immediately when Mita explained what they do, but my question then was, but how can Sindhuzi sit within a delay on transfers? Because I'm sure we as this team, which is trying to ensure that many of them get rolled out, should be alert to all these challenges and not wait for things like this to get triggered. Honourable members and Team NH, can you take a 10-minute break? We've been at it for some long time and some lectures. Thank you for now. FFP is really keen and ready to respond. We've got NERSA in our midst as well. And NERSA, you're welcome if there's anything you'd like to make an input on, because obviously some of the things stretches into your area of competence. You're welcome. Okay. FFP, you want to have first go?
Thank you, Chair. I wasn't sure it was the first go, but I thought that I need to just grab one element of your earlier reflection on what has been presented. And I think it's very important that I need to make this one to for you. Firstly, just want to inform, to confirm that the FSC, Financial Fiscal Commission, is not a subsidiary of the National Treasury.
Oh, sorry.
No, Section 20 to 20 constitutional structures we're reporting to Parliament.
Section?
220 of the Constitution.
Oh, not Section 9.
Which is part of the chapter that deals with public finance and fiscal management issues.
Okay.
But the point is that we are constitutional structure, we report to Parliament. In fact, we're also very critical of what Treasury submits to Parliament in relation to its budget, with the NTPS, appropriations, and we do respond to Parliament independently from that. And part of our submissions that we make to Parliament cuts across provincial, national, and local government. Chair, in the presentation that we made in October, we did, I know you yourself were not there because of other commitments, and the member that spoke last made a couple of recommendations with regard to energy in submission of a statement to Parliament. It would be probably good if you want to you make sure that you get again another copy of it, or sort of highlight some of the stuff if you need to get to know. It was in, is it 3 weeks ago? 3 weeks ago in the afternoon. I think it was on a Thursday. Today's on a Friday, which is a difficult day, but we are. Some of us are not going to catch a 3:10 flight, which is a much more luxurious flight than the other. The third point I wanted to make is that the point that we were trying to make in the presentation is about the need to deal with the shared problem. And you've highlighted angrily in the comments, because there are a number of interventions that have been made, correctly so, but we always find ourselves in because on the one hand, because of the constitutional configuration of the state between province, national, and local government, and where competences are located, but also who's responsible for what, that we sometimes beat ourselves so much, and actually forgetting some of these things actually happen as a consequence of how the constitution has been configured. In relation to provincial and national and local government, and who's responsible for what competencies. And it's probably that point where there's a need to always look at integration and coordination within the space of a holistic response to the energy needs of the country, especially as given it's a public good, and that there's a need to sometimes look at the pricing structure and issues of affordability. One of the comments that also directly made in subsequent reports over time is that there are problems in relation to certain municipalities, in particular districts, where a subsidy or continual grant of Council of the Treasury goes directly into paying off bills, in particular an Eskom bill. So those municipalities are, in many instances, very financially, economically, low tax base. It's a real struggle. So there are specific things that might be sitting here, but this conversation has got a broader spillover into other areas of government and governance. And I think it's correct when you say that there's probably need to also engage with the National Treasury and COCTA. But there's probably a greater need to be able to look at how all these things start dealing with the shared problem that we have. The other matters, we are clear, and the report do speak to where our efficiencies can be made in the overall scheme of government, where our wastages and the comparative assessment between professional and technical services relative to the administration. So I thought that is what we could say. I don't know whether Sasha's got one or two points to add to it. But I thought the first one was more important. I just said, no, it's very important to you and not to the person.
Don't ask me why I thought of that, because I'm one of your greatest fans in Parliament.
Probably a Freudian slip.
maybe because we are fiscal and financial. But in any case, that's even helpful because we need that robust engagement, you know, particularly issues like this because, anyway, kind of a fairly kept safety, you know. I don't know how many times we've been arranging meetings just on our ground. I hope everybody appreciates that the very fact that we keep on doing that is an expression that we have a feeling either direct or indirect or even instinctive that we're not coming to grips with this. We're not satisfied in a sense, or we can't see our way clear that really things are moving well. Kulwa, if you have something to do, I understand you have to move after your input.
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Moyefe Moren from NERSA. I'm part of the steering committee that the department is heading on this ADAM project. But from our side, we have picked up a lot of issues that are really critical for the project also to succeed. I think Honourable Member Igor spoke about the tariffs and the issue of compliance. From NERSA side, as you know, we have at some stage done some audits on about 8 municipalities that we found them lacking, and we published the reports on our website and also on the other website, like the MEU website. But having said that, not having enough teeth to take action, I think the House also should take note that NERSA will need some making in terms of executing some of the tasks that are needed by a regulator to do. So from what we intend doing in the vehicle and working with other stakeholders here is to look at a means of how can NERSA play a big role in terms of compliance and issues around tariffs and capacity building. We are in a state of drafting some of the things that will feed into the committee, the document they have developed. That again will strengthen the role of NERSA and in terms of the achievement of this project. Up to so far, there were some issues that were mentioned. I will just pick up one or two, especially on the one that was raised by FSC earlier around the municipalities. Experiencing a higher tariff, especially those municipalities in rural areas. ESCOM has actually done some work around that. And they have presented a tariff for those municipalities that need assistance in terms of how they can buy from ESCOM using not necessarily the tariffs that are in existence, but using a special tariff for those type of municipalities. And NERSA is looking into that, of which in the near future we'll be having public hearing around the tariff before we approve. Yes, I mentioned issues of compliance, capacity building. But again, from NERSA side, we're looking at saying this money that is given to municipalities for infrastructure backlog should have a value for money, actually. Something must come out. Municipalities also must play a role in terms of doing something out of the money that is given to municipalities. So one of the things that we're looking at is was to probably look at the ring-fencing issues, maybe ring-fencing the business, including the money that was allocated to municipalities. But as you know, there's still the issue of the Regulation Act Electricity, where now we have issues around the Local Government Act and the National Act. I think those will be addressed. But in the meantime, what we think should happen is via the stakeholder, we should drive towards enforcing some of these things that we ask municipalities to reinforce these businesses and to know the money that was invested in the backlog and to see the progress of where it ends and it's well spent. I think those are the issues for now. Thank you.
Okay, Father Hansi. Oh, hands.
South African context here, it doesn't really matter. Chair, thank you very much for the opportunity. Chair, I just want to, I'm going to cover the easy questions. I think my colleagues are more qualified to look at difficult ones. Let me start off by thanking you for acknowledging the role of B-Side organization and for branding our deployees special troops. I'm sure it will lift the morale in the trenches because many of them are out in the rural areas where other qualified people don't want to go and work. So they've accepted it upon themselves to make that sacrifice and serve the country in that capacity, because many municipalities, as we've heard, are crying out for this kind of technical support. But I want to start here with the last point on the FSC presentation, which was really, I think, that the Constitution enjoins national and provincial government to support municipalities. I've made this point as part of my opening statement, that this particular debate goes to the very heart of the functionality of local government, and I'm very encouraged that the committee recognizes it within that particular context. And we're going to have to do much more when we roll out the full ADEM and we go beyond the pilot to ensure that we address the functionality issues as well, from a financial point of view, but also from a skills point of view, etc. And I'm also encouraged by the fact that we've been told not to duplicate and to bring resources together. You have indicated that MISA is still in its infancy. Yes, we are operational for about a year and a half. We are still going through teething problems, because as you know, government processes are slow typically, but the challenge is immediate, and that is why we have prioritized this initiative in particular. So in future, Chair, I think as we grow, we want to grow with the pilot into the actual implementation of fuller program. So that commitment is certainly there, and we need to convey that to this committee. The specifics as to how we're going to address this, I think my colleague will talk to, but I think just from a high level, we want to make that particular commitment. Chair, you have raised other issues, and the honourable members have also raised other issues with regards to, for example, business adopter municipality. Together with SALGA, we manage that particular program. And coincidentally, ESCOM is one of the signatories to Business Adopter Municipality, and they've committed to adopt, I think, 5 municipalities. Now, that particular program, I was one of the programs I managed in my past life before MISA in the department proper. And I don't know at this particular point in time how far they are and whether they have selected the 5 municipalities. But it would make so much sense if we can align that with the added pilot municipalities, exactly to avoid that duplication and also to create critical mass in supporting the affected municipalities. And I will go back and I will inquire as to where that process is and see if it is not possible to align and even increase the number of municipalities that they need to support. Chair, you raised a critical issue as well around participation by the private sector in this program and in electricity distribution and how we open up that space. I think municipalities would encourage that. The approach in any case emerging with regards to infrastructure that we are seeing in the country is that we need to bring in the private sector, even with SIPs. And I think the message from the administration all over is clear that we want to collaborate, but we need to find out whether the regulatory regime, and I'm no expert in the regulatory regime around distribution specifically, whether that would allow that, and whether the private sector would be willing to assume that kind of risk, and whether they are ready to move in. Because certainly it is an area, if efficiency is required, it would be encouraged that they also participate with their own systems and processes. And also impart capacity to municipalities. The last comment from my side, Chair, is with regards to the issue of tariffs and the use of that revenue for other purposes. Now, at the moment, we are aware that that revenue is being diverted into other services, but it is also being diverted into paying for salaries and other issues at municipalities and other costs at municipalities, which in many cases has little to do with electricity itself. But at the same time, Chair, I don't know if you would recall last year, there was a protest in La Seine. And at the heart of that issue was because people owed on the electricity bills. Then, because they didn't pay that, the other services were also cut. So I'm trying to say that there's another side to this debate in the local government sector. Is that yes, we can say and we can that all the money should be dedicated or it should flow back into electricity. But the reality is, as the FEC has indicated, because of the financial challenges at municipalities, the revenue from electricity has become a source of income covering other costs as well. And it could be, we must just be very sensitive as a collective how we approach that particular matter as, we want to avoid the city situations. And that is my concluding remark on this matter. I'm sure my colleagues would want to talk specifically to some of the issues that were raised by you and the members. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, thanks, Chairperson. Just to come in and provide some responses to those questions and comments pertaining to how Minister and what Minister is doing to try and address capacity deficiencies in municipalities. Firstly, I wanted to indicate that indeed we are doing a number of things to try and help municipalities to address their own internal capacity problems. And of course, this to us is one of the most difficult part of the work that we do, but indeed we are really trying our best. So through that program, we sort of go and bring in young professionals, people who have come out of the higher training institutions like FETs, some of them even with lower levels of qualification. And we place them in various municipalities so that they can undergo that experiential learning over a period, mostly around 3 years or so. And after that period, then they graduate to become full-fledged professionals. The key challenge around this is that in doing so, given that our intention is to help municipalities build their own capacity that they can use in the medium to long term. So how do we then get municipalities to retain these young people as and when they graduate out of the program? That's the difficult part. Honorable member asked about the success stories. Our initial take is that for us as minister, it's really early days to start to talk about those stories that are good. But then again, we have an example in the water sector whereby we met with a district called the Mbe District in Limpopo. And through that collaboration, we brought in about 56 young people to be trained within the municipalities in the water sector. So these young people, these 56 young graduates, are going to remain there over a period of about 2 years.
working on the various skills that are owned by this municipality. And in this case, we are comfortable because of the kind of agreement that we have signed with the council there, through which the council has made another taking that after the period during which Mita will be supporting the municipality, the municipality will be able to retain this young professional. Of course, this is an agreement that you can force through the court of law. It also requires goodwill from the municipality so that at the end of the period, then they honor that agreement. Because if they do, we already see that as one of the key success stories that can be applied in other municipalities. In most cases so far, the previous experience was such that we relied on municipalities' goodwill to say at the end of the period of support they were going to retain that. But we want to strengthen that mechanism so that we compel municipalities to try and absorb these young people and then they graduate. Of course, given the amount of resources that we have, we are not in a position at the moment to cover all the municipalities, to have each and every municipality one or more graduates within in them undergoing this kind of development. Safe to say that we are trying to expand the program, and over the coming week or two, we intend to issue an advert that is going to call for the young graduates to apply. I think through that initiative, we are going to bring in extra 250 young people who are going to be placed in various municipalities. So it means the number of municipalities with these trainees will then grow. And then for the next 3 years, they will remain there, and then hopefully after that, then they're going to be retained by the municipalities. Coupled with that is the mentorship program that we are also implementing. We are going to also issue an advert calling for the various organizations to respond, and through that then we hope that we'll bring in about 50 mentors. I must indicate that the issue of mentorship becomes much more difficult as we move towards the peripheral areas in rural municipalities. Because most of these professionals are concentrated in the urban areas. It's easy for us to get people who are keen to come into our mentorship program in Gauteng, in KwaZulu-Natal, in Western Cape, for instance. But it becomes very difficult. Sometimes due to the shortage of those professionals in some of the provinces like Limpopo, like Mpumalanga, and so on. But our intention, because as members will recall, our mandate is to focus mostly on those low-capacity municipalities. And as we all know, most of those municipalities are situated in rural areas. We need to find a balance of ensuring that those municipalities or the candidates that we place in those municipalities also benefit in the same way as the rural municipalities. Our initial approach was to work indeed with the retired professionals.
Yes, just bear in mind we still have to get others to make inputs as well.
Okay.
No, carry on.
I will shorten that. We're trying to target the retired professionals to bring them in as mentors. And our strategy was to negotiate for favorable rates for the work that we're going to do in mentoring those municipalities. That has not been successful that much, although we continue to engage with the various professional bodies so that over time we might succeed in getting some favorable rates from these retired professionals. I must indicate, maybe towards closing my response, that there's a need to integrate with various stakeholders. One of the institutions that we are working very closely with and we are continuously engaging is LGCEDA, so that we try and consolidate our efforts towards building capacity in municipalities. Because MISA alone, with the limited resources, we recognize that it will be very difficult to ramp up the numbers to a level where we can say we are comfortable. Given the number of municipalities that we are trying to target. But on the other hand, I think there's more work that needs to be done in support of municipalities to ensure that municipalities are well prepared to be able to work with us through our support to also play their role in building their own internal capacity. One of the key things that we are looking at as COFTA has been the issue of regulating. Of course, Nerva as well has mentioned the fact that there's more to be done around ensuring that we enforce the regulations in place in a manner that will then compels municipalities to comply with whatever requirements were put in place. I think that is very crucial. Because without that, without those strengthened regulations, it will continue to be very difficult for us to get municipalities to respond appropriately in addressing their own internal capacities. I think, Chairperson, I'll put there in the 20 minutes of time.
Thank you. Very, very brief.
Thank you, Chair. I will be brief. Just one person that we need to attend to. The last one, which you actually asked, the issue of why Mr. Ibata is not present in the 9 municipalities that we have allocated the ADAM allocation to presently, whereas we are in the 107. I think, Chair, the answer for us is two-pronged. When I presented, I only focus on one side of NISA, the sector program. But there's also another element to it where I indicated that we are intending within a short space of time to recruit 9 additional electrical engineers which will be based in each province, one per province for now. And the intention for that is that those ones will then assist in those municipalities that are not currently having a technical employee at a NISA. It was because of those gaps. That's why we came up with this as an interim strategy. However, at the present moment, we have under the CIPS, CIPS specifically, NISA is the stakeholder on that, which is the one that is under PRASA. That specific CIP, we're looking at all the 12 priority cities. And through that, if you see on the allocation that Adam spoke to, which was, I think, about 3 or 4 cities, and these cities are currently being served under the ZIP 7. So that's how we are currently providing our technical support for now. And I think that's it. Thank you, Chair.
Anything from FALC, then the department will round up.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. The first question that was raised is around the issue of what SALA is doing in terms of monitoring projects for this program. Chairperson, currently at SALA level, we are monitoring at the macro level. We have program managers at provincial level, who then reports back to SALA through our various working groups. Probably an issue that we must look into going forward is how do we begin to cascade the issue of monitoring at the micro level. But at the macro level, that is happening. Issues around partnering features. There are quite a number of programs that we've undertaken through the local government system. But subsequent to that, the sector is now engaging with the newly established electricity and water sector. And we had a presentation from this sector in our December working group meeting. I think it's important to also indicate that this sector had internal problems, but now they have been resolved. And they've presented a plan in terms of how we are going to collaborate in terms of implementing electricity-related programs, Chair. I will then hand over to my colleagues to address the two other issues.
The issue of the SDAs with ESCOM, there are currently no SDAs in place with ESCOM. And we are trying to address this issue. That is a very high priority for us, looking at a framework agreement to address that across the board.
Okay, I think the last one, which is in terms of supporting the weaker municipalities and the members wanted to know the success stories that we as SALGA has
when Umsunduzi was struggling, and at the time that they did not have the head of electricity, and things were not going well, Ethekwini was approached to assist, and Ethekwini together with Eskom, because we realized that Eskom and local government have got a mandate to deliver the electricity services. So both of us together put together a program that would assist Umsunduzi, and we then withdrew when they got their own capacity, and they now have the head of electricity in Umsunduzi. And as we speak, there is a meeting that is held at the KwaZulu-Natal COPTA offices, where Ethekwini and Eskom are also jointly assisting the Ulundi municipality that is having a problem, and we are working together to try and get Ulundi out of the problems that they are having. And again, not only the municipality, it's the municipality with Eskom. So at the national level, we are then also trying to develop a framework where we could then be able to identify the struggling municipalities and then get those stronger municipalities together with Eskom to assist. It is easier to do that because Eskom has got a bigger footprint than the municipality. So when they work together, then they can achieve more. Thank you, Chair and Member.
Member, that's a very interesting thing. Because that's the kind of news we would like to hear. Whereby utilities, just on their own volition, that's working together. You know, get rid of the silo mentality. Just say, look, here is a problem in front of us. You've got a competence on this and a mandate according to law and constitution. So what do we do? Let's just come together and see how we fix it. And those initiatives become models for the rest of the country. Good shot on that one, I must say. Good shot. Okay. Department of Energy.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable members, if I may, I will try to address some of the questions and my colleague will do the remaining. In doing that, I would use the implementation model in order to start with the first question and then carry on with the rest. Now, one question was criteria for how did we choose the municipalities. Now, when we learned that National Treasury would allocate the funding which was available, we discussed the whole matter with them, and then obviously they got deadlines which we had to meet in order for them to approve the transfer of the funding. Now, during that limited period which we had, and from experience of our regional managers who are on the ground, they know exactly which municipality is doing what capacity they have got, what critical interventions they need, and so on. And keeping in mind that we also have the limited funding, we had to actually make a decision and find which of the municipalities had the emergency interventions and then allocate the money according to them, if they were able to do it, and also, what benefit they would get. So that's how the criteria, as far as the criteria is concerned. And also some of the municipalities who might be also critical, because there are lots of them that they are in that situation, they were not able to give us enough information to be able to evaluate them. So that's why we just came up with the 9 municipalities. Now, the second question, which I noted, was why haven't we transferred any funding? No.
Just before you move into that, sorry, I want to remember to break the train of thought. That's why SALGA exists. Because to me, please correct me,
The moment you find that those desirable minister are not responding, pick up the phone, speak to Salka, say, "Minister, these are our expectations. We have to get, you know, the 9, if that's the 9 or whatever, from that 108, but they're not responding. Can you please make sure?" Because at times now we've got to spend another time to explain why Kibe municipalities ended up being part of that 9. Just a small comment, please don't respond to it. But to me, in future, it's a matter of just picking up a phone and speak to Salka, just help us on it. Okay, back to you.
We were dealing with why not transfer the funding. Yes. Now, the implementation, the implementation model, the funding was allocated, the treasury to each municipality, and it was published. Now, we couldn't transfer the money because it's a waste of time, and also money will be wasted because if we don't know where we are, then we wouldn't have control of the things. So that's why each of the 9 had to actually give us business plans, specifically identifying which projects would be used for this funding. Now, based on the business plans which we received, then we discussed them during the MASC meeting, and then all those projects were identified. Then we developed the contract which specifically talks to the specific projects. And funding will not be transferred at any time before there is progress made. And progress we will monitor as soon as we receive the monthly report. That means with the contract there is also a form which shows exactly how the money will be spent. Based on that, which we sign for it, then we monitor, and if the progress is according to the plan, then the money will be transferred. But this will plan with Treasury, and then the money will be transferred automatically as soon as the progress is monitored and verified. The other question I would deal with is time for Mini Adam. Now the contract is until July next year. We signed a contract with each of the 9 municipalities until July next year, in which case they would definitely, some of the projects might run over July, but they definitely will commit themselves before March this year, which means that the money will be transferred according to their commitments. The last one is just where the process is. Well, the projects are identified, the plans are in place, the timelines are set and signed for, and we are now waiting for the first progress report before we can start with the actual transferring based on the cash flow transfer report, which is Annex Jan B, as we showed in the implementation model. Thank you, Chair.
In addition to what my colleague has already said, there are 3 questions
that have been raised, and I'm going to answer them all at once. And those 3 questions were, how do we deal with a growing backlog, the strategy, as well as the investment into the electricity distribution industry. How we deal with the backlog, we first have to assess the backlog. We need to have an understanding or the appreciation of how high is the backlog and how much that is going to cost us. And that will be informed by this study that will be undertaken by the consultant that we're about to appoint. So before we can be able to say, we are doing this, we need to get that understanding. So that will give us the understanding. That will then form part of the be part of the strategy that we are in the process of developing. That strategy will also talk to the investment in the electricity distribution industry. To say then, going forward, how then do we invest in this sector? Who should be the main role? I mean, who should be the role players? Which then will talk to all the role players
out exactly how can we be able to raise finance for all the entities that need to be catered for. And in this instance, we're talking about municipalities. So the backlog as well as the investment, the strategy we'll talk to that. So we'll deal with various stakeholders, and we'll also look into other issues that have been raised in the House, and that some of those issues have been responded to by my colleague. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much to all. I hope you appreciate that we are really trying to get somewhere on this matter, not just because we have a constitutional duty to conduct oversight, but also assist with this as South Africans. But I just wanted to highlight once again that I can't invoke some of the issues that have compelled us to ask a new question. We will not come back here, because I would like just to be seen as a standing court. Somebody to respond, why did you submit that? You know, that kind of thing. To me, you guys have got to flag that out at least, but Mark does it. Steering company does it. Rather you spend hours and hours of the weekend so that we can have a composite report on the strategy and program. Not some of the things that are easy here. Maybe it's the initial stages. Probably that's unavoidable. Well and good. Just a few things that also asked to be done is that if you could share with us, because I wanted to, if you just plot geographically in your software, where the biggest problems are in terms of the distribution or the infrastructure network, because I think we did ask for that. And also, one of the things that we're interested is the four who have probably Kalka and Nisa. It's something that in which municipalities are already doing their own upgrade outside Adam. So it's a sort of interest for honored members to see how that's been done. You know, and whether they can be used as a reference points as well for us. In conclusion, can I just raise a few things under the numbers to see if it could be issues that could be, you know, taken up in future. I've got quite a handful of them. The first thing I want to sell to you is that, to me, we need to have a two-stage endeavor on asset management. A lot of things have been raised here. I can't remember all of them. A two-stage endeavor, in what way? One, on energy, which could be driven by the Department of Energy. But thereafter, one general, because assets at municipal level are not energy only. And I don't want just to think that when you say assets, particularly Mr. kept on awakening us on that. Yeah. But municipal level assets are assets, water, for example. They could be assets. So COCTA could drive that, but it's up to you. But just to say, but to me, Octa stroke Salk, you know. But to me, it's just a new world, that of asset management. On a profile, you said how much was the value of the asset date? I mean, almost 400 billion. Now, if you go around with 400 billion, that's called how much omnibus do you raise? You know, that's called, you know. It came up very strongly during this mobile, you know, that look, the asset base, you know, fund that looked into it very. But then, I think what we're doing here is that, okay, Minister of Municipality, you want us to fund you. How well do you look after this this asset? Not just do you have it, which is why I'm then giving this suggestion. Okay, can you make sure that we go and do the honor by recommending to whoever to consider this idea of INAPA, because I don't need to repeat, we can sense from our side as members as well that much as there is commitment, you know, but coherence is still a bit elusive, you know, coordination. Sometimes these platforms are very good, particularly when there's already effort being done on the ground, you know, to ensure that our policy frameworks, our concepts are in are on track.
The other area is, I'm sure the committee would be happy to have responses to FFC's recommendations, both current and the previous recommendations about troops level. We'll get the exact date. I just picked up when we do the budget review and recommendations report that there were certain things that both Department of Energy and National Treasury were supposed to have responded to, and when got some documentation on members, found that some of it has not been responded to. So it would be very good that, you know, we get responses, you know, at least by the end of this financial year. On FFC's recommendation. Oh, just another rider on the first suggestion is that we should have, whilst focusing on energy, but special reference must be on electricity. Another area is the investment drive. I think we should look at innovation, innovative ways of enhancing the investment drive, as well as using the existing asset base. I know municipalities are quite capable of doing that on their own, but you know, when I'm a jobbaker, but when they started talking about bonds as a municipality a couple of years ago, I found, you know, municipalities and bonds, what's that? But there it is, you know. But all I'm saying is that at a general level, they should be honest with us in an innovative way. I think also it would be an awakening call to even other municipalities to start realizing that they have got a potential in an asset. Maybe they already have, but once, you know, there's a focus on it, even that awareness and keenness could even strengthen. Cross-subsidization should be addressed vigorously. I leave it very, very big and broad like that. You know, that's one of our skills as members of parliament. We just work out things broadly. We leave it to you to do it. But I think the issue of cross-subsidization must be really addressed quite vigorously. I know within it there's a challenge of overall funding models for municipalities. Can't run away from that reality, but see the other end, you can't run away from it as well. It has to be addressed. There must be creative and skillful utilization of NISA. I'll put it nicely like that. Other things will come up when it gets unpacked, you know. Because amongst other things that comes into mind, who is at the cutting edge to articulate skills development with all the tools that we have, FETs, CETAs, that other thing, ISDG, you know. Surely there must be an instrument or a tool that we use within the steering committee. There could be other things, you know, we still 9 engineers, 1 for each. There could be other ways. So I'm saying just a creative and a skillful utilization space within this initiative. And obviously that's linked to intensifying focus on skills development. I won't even dwell on that. Other members are sure you'll agree with me if you say it would make an appeal to the Department of Energy to expedite and intensify the implementation of pilot projects. Intensify the implementation of the pilot project. That's quite loaded as well, because when you unpack it, there are a lot of things that must be left to look into. But take into account a couple of things. In fact, two things. One, engaging ECOM, because that has been raised, to see how we do it. Already, thanks, Bob Mapumuri, you've already given a model of what you need in your own evolution. And also engaging FFC. I know we've got a unique thing, but from time to time can be used as a sounding board. Bring your research work, let people engage in it. But the other point is, you take into account issues raised by members today through the Chairperson's office,
a lot of things, Mama Sagas, you can't even list them. But during implementation, all those things must be taken into account. We also need to explore how to extradite Adam in the context of this seat. I don't know, you said you're already part of a seat, but is it from an energy perspective, electricity perspective? Because if it is, then we can drop this point. But that's why I'm crafting this proposal in that way, that explore how to expedite within the context of seats. You see, well, there are 18 seats. Some are very, very clear. They are from perspective, or they are from this and that and that. But need to be looked into. Of course, there are two legs in this. There are renewals, FSC calls them, and there's new infrastructure. So that balance can be worked out at the PICC level. The steering committee needs to intensify the business adopter municipality program as a campaign. Sorry, I'm a political animal. I like campaigns more than programs. As a campaign, and include the support of legislature. We can't just be seen as conducting oversight every time. We've got to make sure that this country turns out. I'm not saying parliament, I'm saying legislature, because there are 10 legislators in South Africa. I don't see them holding their arms to ensure that they give confidence to business. How many businesses are there in the country? And how many already have shown, not engaged, but just shown keenness on this program? So whose duty is it? As far as I'm concerned, it's all of us who are capable, who are able to make an effort on this. But the last one, honourable members, fine to always say that government is government. That I think also from our side, Mama Ferguson and Honourable Hrailing, that we need to have to explore an interparliamentary committee engagement in future. The various other committees, your appropriations, as they have said, your COPTA, finance, if need be, you know, we should actually, you know, interact with them and see if there's a way of strengthening what they, you know, is already being done on Adam. Of course, as we say, we can see this mini Adam, and we'd like to see a mini Adam pretty soon. But as Mr. Costa has said, we're moving until this mini Adam is probably until July next year, isn't it? Probably until July. That to me, that gives us time to ensure what we should do about building momentum beyond Mini Adam. Hence, I am saying, Department of Energy, as the leader of this, ensure that through the steering committee, the implementation of the project is both expedited and intensified, so that you learn lessons out of it as much as you can, to build a formidable foundation to launch a bigger one. And of course, I don't know how much is coming into the national budget in February, but at least the medium-term budget policy statement in October next year must say something better for this. And I maintain strongly that this pilot project must give confidence, not just to national treasury, but to everybody. On that regard, I don't remember that it was tough, but I think with these few, I know our minds are on how much effort we put so that we come back after the election, but at the end of the day, life has to go on as well, unfortunately. I think with these few issues, it will capture quite a number of issues that we have raised. And particularly expediting the project, the pilot project, and also looking positively and favorably to the Indaba idea. And on that basis, let me thank everyone for coming, honorable members, the department, SALGA, NISA, and the RFC, and NASA, their absence, and everybody else. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned. See you next week, Tuesday.